Access number 30641, Mr. John Lindsay, Real 4. Now, so what's the next process? You start waterproofing. You're gradually getting ready. Do you, you know, for the thing?
Oh, we didn't know what we were getting ready for, of course.
You weren't aware of a date yet, of
course. No, nothing at all. No.
So what's the next process? You're at Brandon. Do you stay at Brandon?
Yes.
You seem to move to Worthing only in May. Anything yes. you do before that?
Well, we spent all that time waterproofing and training and going out and exercises.
So what are these exercises like?
They were just a big farce because you couldn't fire at anything. But we had target practice. We went on the firing range. And I didn't fire tanks from there. Any of my scout car, we hardly used the Bren guns at all. But the big boys, the big tanks, spent a lot of time on the firing range.
Well, the exercises, as far as you were concerned, weren't particularly realistic.
No.
And
they couldn't be
reporting in Morse.
We still did Morse while we were there, yes.
Now, so what's next?
So then we got wind of the fact that something was happening, and we were told that we would be moving down to Worthing. And we drove all the way down.
Now, you seem to remember that reasonably well, the move to, you know, the drive.
Yes, we drove through London, I remember that. And I think I had a fantastic reception going to drive it.
Tell me, in what way?
Well, everybody were waving at us, and the organisation was quite fantastic. You see, the whole of the south of England was solid with military equipment, and every vehicle was, every regiment, every squadron was appointed a bit of road where they were to park and where they could do their cooking and everything else. And we were all lining up to go across. Of course, by that time we knew that we were going across, but we didn't know where we were going or when we were going.
So anything in these final exercises?
No, actually Montgomery came up to see us in Brandon and gave us a pep talk for what it was worth. And
now, what did you think of Montgomery?
People had a good laugh. We all had a good laugh. Well, they knew Montgomery from the desert, you see. From the desert, and I didn't, of course. And they weren't very impressed. They all thought he got to the desert at just the right time when all the equipment was there, so he was a lucky one.
And but he impressed some people. What did you think of what he said to you?
I can't remember a word of what he said, of course, but it was just to boost our morale, I suppose, and I suppose he managed that. And then, as I say, we went down to Worthing, had that long drive down. In Worthing, one thing I particularly remember, we were all dragged to the cinema to see a film about the Crimean War, about the war in Crimea, I should say. And it's called The Charge of the Light Brigade. And in one of the scenes, the general, where he was, shouts, 8 hours forward. And that's why I had to go and see the wretched thing. It was supposed to give us a boost, I suppose.
And did it?
Yes, but Worthing was quite fun. But we used to go around the town in the tanks and we churned up all the roads. And funny enough, I was on a holiday recently with somebody who was a boy at the time in Worthing. He still remembers the pavements were all being carved up by us on the tanks.
I mean, were you aware of that happening, or was it something that was going on?
Oh, no, we knew what was going on, yes. But we didn't, as I say, we didn't know that D-Day had been agreed or where we were actually going. Could have been anywhere. It was all kept very, very secret indeed. Until eventually we lined up on these roads leading down to the port of embarkation. Then the night before, must have been June the 5th, because it was postponed by one day, wasn't it, if I remember rightly. We were told that we were going over to France, but not precisely where, and that we'd be leaving the crack of dawn. And then it was put off by one day, and we all were hanging around. And then we left. And
were you given any other briefing at all as to what you were meant to be doing?
Yes, we were told we were to take... our first objective was to take... what's the town called? Come to me in a minute. It's about 15 miles inland.
Bayeux?
Bayeux, yes. That was our objective.
So you then moved. What about when you went to Portsmouth?
went to Portsmouth, then we were late in the evening, we went onto the landing craft tank. And
now, what about the process of loading up? Because it's not that tank landing craft. What do you remember about the embarkation process?
And all the vehicles had to be secured with chains in case the sea got a bit rough, and that was a terribly difficult job. And of course, the tanks by then had all been totally waterproofed, and I think we had about two or three scout cars on board as well, and we were all given sleeping pills, which some of us took and some didn't.
Did you take yours?
And told they should go and have a good rest, and in the morning we'd be landing somewhere, rather. Still didn't know where. We knew it was Normandy, but...
So you went across on the 7th of June to the 8th of June?
Yes.
So you'd land on D plus 2. Now, anything you remember? Well, you'd be asleep, I presume.
All about, yes. But, well, as best one could. Because there was no accommodation, of course, you slept in your vehicles. And there's not much room in a small scout car to sleep. You've got to curl up. And there's cold steel around you, so it's not all that funny, really. And then we got to the other end and...
Were you seasick?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I probably felt a bit queasy.
So, where did you land?
Oh, it's in there. I can't remember the exact
place. It says Aramarch.
Yeah, that's, yes.
Gold Beach.
Gold Beach, yes.
Now, how did you get ashore? I mean, did you actually drive off?
Oh, yes, we drove off. I suppose we were about 20, 25 yards from the shore, and we drove through the water.
And did the waterproofing work?
In our case, it did, but of course the Americans didn't, but that's not relevant here. No, ours worked pretty well. Most of the vehicles got ashore. And by that time, the beaches were reasonably clear. And we drove straight.
They weren't under fire?
No.
Not
until we got further inland.
Now, what did you actually do? You move inland towards...
We were supposed to move on to Bogo the next day, but we first camped in an orchard. What that part of France is known as the Bocage country, and each field is surrounded by tall hedges, and so you get quite good cover. But of course, there were no German planes, but lots of British planes overhead, and we made camp in one of these Bocage fields, where there were lots of dead cows, and as you probably know, once a cow gets struck, they blow up and they stink like mad. It's very depressing. And the funny thing in the adjoining field was another tank regiment, and my old French master. I happened to see him there, so that was good. But he got killed later.
Now, can we talk about the rations? Because you mentioned the rations.
Yes,
it was a compo ration. What exactly were they?
There were boxes about 18 inches across and about 12 inches high, I suppose, and which was pre-packed with enough food for five people, I think it was. I can't remember for how many days, but it contained some concentrated food, but tins of apricots and rice pudding and stews and self-heating soups, cigarettes, chocolate.
Because self-heating soups, they don't seem to have them now. I mean,
yes, you can still get them, I'm told.
How does it work?
Yes, as you pull on a normal tin, it heats some. It's got a heating element in the bottom. Don't ask me how it works, but it does.
They work?
Yes.
And what did you think of the food you got, you know, this compo food?
It was very good. And, of course, we supplemented it with pinching food off the fields. There were potatoes and there were lots of French farms which had been deserted by the farmers. And their gladers were absolutely stuffed full with goodies. Everything you could possibly think of, meats and fruits and vegetables and chickens, and we lived very well.
any looting to go with the rioting?
Oh yes.
It was liberating,
not looting. We liberated a couple of motorized bicycles, well, very light motorcycles, I suppose.
Is this from the French or from?
From the French, yes. I mean, the French farmers had mostly left. You see, the French farmers made a fortune during the war of supplying Germany with dairy produce. And then when we came, they weren't very happy. They didn't know whether to be friendly to us with us or not, because they didn't know whether we'd be thrown back into the sea, which was quite more than likely at the time. And so they just disappeared and left everything at the farms, everything as it was. In fact, we drove the tanks into the farm buildings at night for camouflage, so the whole house collapsed under the tank, and nobody could see us, or looting, or whatever you call it. It was the only way you can keep the army going. People don't appreciate that.
What sort of things were popular to loot?
Oh, mainly food at that stage, because you couldn't carry anything with you, but bicycles you see, 8,000 was a cavalry regiment, and most of the regular officers that had horses, and we had a whole string of horses following us, and cars and things. We did very well.
Now, what about refueling I mean, you hadn't fired anything yet, but what were the sort of
refuelings were brought up in jerry cans on the 3-ton trucks from Mulberry. Well, Mulberry was in existence just the first few days, of course, but later on. And there was no shortage of fuel at any stage. The whole organization was absolutely fantastic. Within about 2 or 3 days, we had a mobile laundry going, we had a post office, and showers, and everything was done for the comfort as opposed to what's happening nowadays. And we never had any supply problems. Sometimes we were a bit short of ammunition, but not really in any serious way.
Now, so what happens next then?
Well, then we were asked to slowly advance, and of course we got stuck in a place called Bourg-Bohan, all around there. It took us weeks and weeks before we got to Bayeux in the end.
You seem to be going to Villers-Bocage.
Yes, well, that's one of the famous. And our first job was always to shoot the church spires down, because the German observers were in there to direct their air force. But we didn't see too much of the air force. So we had quite a bit of friendly fire.
Who from?
The British Air Force.
The RAF, not the Americans.
Well, I don't know. The aeroplanes, I don't know who they were. Probably British, I think.
And what were those attacks like? Do you remember anything in particular from that?
No, we either in the tanks or we bailed out into the ditches. And as it says, they were going to Villers-Bocage, which was one of the disasters.
Now, what do you remember about that? Because you don't comment on that in your
memoir. What I remember in particular was that we were all in a convoy and some idiot took a turning to the left, and before we knew where we were, we were doubling back on ourselves. We couldn't get any further because we ran into the tail end of our convoy. And the fifth tanks, I think it was, forget, one of the other tank regiments were in front of us. And the Germans were just waiting with their Tiger tanks and popped off one tank after the other. And it was a major disaster, which never had much publicity. All that is in the histories now. And we lost quite a few tanks and quite a few people. But we lost one or two scout cars that tended
to survive.
And what
happened to you that day? Did you come under fire, or what do you remember?
Yeah, we were under fire, but it wasn't that extreme. But, you know, memory plays tricks on you. I really can't remember. But the worst, of course, were all these burnt-out tanks with bodies and all over the place. Mostly Germans, but British as well.
What about this reconnaissance role? I mean, was that working, or were you just not able to?
It was working part of the time, but very little, because we knew jolly well where the opposition was.
So what happened next then?
Well, we slowly made our way through Normandy, very slowly, too slowly.
When was it you got wounded? Because that may
Well, that was pretty. I forget. About 2 or 3 weeks after we landed.
So not on the Villers Bocage.
No.
What happened when you were wounded? How did it happen?
That's a shrapnel. I still got it in my leg. And I think I tell the story in there of how I was picked up by ambulance, bleeding like a
pig. What were you hit by? Bullets?
Shrapnel.
From what?
From, it must have been a bomb.
So it wasn't long-range artillery or anything?
And I was taken by ambulance to the nearest dressing station, except they couldn't find the dressing station. We drove around for about 2 hours, by which time it stopped bleeding, and they sent me back to the regiment. That was the end of that. And that's the only scratch I ever had during the... Oh, no, except I caught my finger in a Sten gun, but that's neither here nor there.
So as far as you're concerned, it wasn't a bad wound.
No.
You were all right.
But, you know, at first it looked bad because there was so much blood. But it was quite harmless.
And you're still in the armoured car at this time?
No, I was outside the armoured car. I think we were cooking our meal. I still had an armoured car, yes. I think we were cooking our evening meal or something.
So how would you prepare your evening meal? I mean, what was the
method? We had a little burner, which usually pumped up, you know, and we had mess tins and
would each sort of vehicle, armored car or tank, prepare its own, or was it communal cooking?
Yes, most the tanks did their own, and I think the scout cars got together, but I don't remember the exact details.
Were you nervous at all? I mean,
young and stupid. No, really, one wasn't. You know, you just went along with what went on. Was one frightened? I suppose one was. But, you know, everybody else was in the same boat, and you just got on with it.
So you weren't particularly frightened. It didn't worry you late at night, that kind of thing.
Well, no more than anybody else would be, but I mean, you didn't sort of panic or run the other way or desert or anything like that. There was very little of it.
You don't feel you showed it.
No, sure it didn't.
Did you get rum or cigarette rations while you were out there?
We got a rum ration every evening. Yes.
Now tell me about the rum ration. I mean, how was it doled out?
The sergeant made it. He's got a big flagon, and each bot had a soup spoon. We got a soup spoon full of this. Well, he normally saved it, put it in a bottle, and then we had a good booze out once a week or whatever it was. Cigarettes, yes.
Did you smoke?
No, not really. I did try the once or twice. Well, I did smoke the odd one, yes, but not seriously, anyway.
So what would you do with your ration?
I must have given it. I think I probably smoked it. It was a small ration. I don't even remember how many.
It was a pretty large ration. It was a lot.
Yes. Well, there were boxes of 50, tins of 50.
You don't remember much.
I don't remember what happened.
So what's the next thing you remember? I mean, there's a sort of period in July where nothing much is happening.
No. Well, what one remembers next, of course, we were supposed to go and relieve the parachute drop at, although that was a little later.
A bit later. Do you remember the advance following the captured car? I'm not sure you were involved in the capture.
But
the advance following it towards the Falaise Gap, were you involved in that?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
It was normally slow going, and we were shot at, and it made slow progress along these mostly cross country. You know, with a tank, you can go anywhere. But the scout cars had to stick to the roads; they couldn't go cross country.
Would you feel ahead, reconnoitring, or were you not?
Hardly ever. We'd hardly ever exercised that thing. I think the honeys were used more for that, but there wasn't too much of that because. The tanks were normally at the head and just forced their way ahead. And, of course, quite a few got knocked out and we had to be re-equipped and go back to base, not too far back.
What about the Hunnies? Were they more effective than the armoured cars?
Yes,
they were a light tank. What did you think of the Hunny? Would you roll?
I was never in a Hunny itself, but I think I probably preferred to be in a scout car or in a tank.
Why? Because, you know...
Well, I don't know. I've never been in a Hunny, so I can't say much. But you see, in a tank and in a scout car, you could sleep in there at night and you had steel around you. I know it was cold, but you felt quite safe. Some people slept under the tank and one or two got killed that way because the tank sank and onto them. It's happens. But you could sleep. You had your company, you had a radio, tuned into the BBC. You weren't allowed to tune into the BBC, but you did, of course. And because there was not much intercommunication between the vehicles in the evenings. And you had your sort of basic comforts, blankets and bed roll. And as I say, you felt fairly safe with a bit of steel around it, although the scout cars had only about just enough to keep it 303 out, no more than that.
What did you think of your officers? I mean, we haven't really talked about your officers much.
Well, Sergeant, they were mostly the regulars, regular cavalry officers who had been in the desert for a long time. And well, I don't think we were very impressed with our officer material.
And why not?
Well, it seems rather laid back, and it didn't sort of encourage you, and there was not much communication going on, and
they weren't inspirational.
No. That's the word I should have thought of. Yes, no, that's a good way of describing them. The younger ones who hadn't been out there before, they were rather nice, but again, they were inexperienced. But they were, the younger ones, I would say, were a lot braver. The tank commanders always had the roughest time because they used to stick out, and that was rather a dangerous occupation. The tank commanders and the tank drivers, because when if the gun was in a certain position, you couldn't get out. The driver couldn't get out of the tank when he was shot at.
So the young officers, the second lieutenants, yes, basically the subalterns,
they lost quite a few of those.
But it was the more senior, the majors.
I think they inspired the youngsters. You know.
The second. What about it's the majors, the regular.
The majors and the regular majors. They were more used to having horses and things. And
what about the colonel? Do you remember him?
Vaguely, I don't even remember his name.
So he didn't have a big impact. Did you have any particular friends in the unit still? I mean, had you?
Yes, it was quite certainly in headquarters squadron in the scout cars. We were all quite friendly.
They realise you were German?
Oh yes.
Did you still have an accent there? Because you haven't got an accent
there. No, I didn't have an accent.
But they knew you were German.
Well, yes, we were all drafted in at the same time. You see.
So you'd come in with people who did sound German,
but. Most of, I suppose there must have been about 12 of us or so, some of whom spoke good English, others didn't. Oh, they certainly knew. But, you know, we were exposed to the same dangers, and they soon forgot about it. And in fact, they're quite useful, because when we took prisoners of war, we did a little bit of interpreting here and there.
Would you be taking prisoners of war at this stage?
Just a few, yes, but not many. People who gave themselves up, really, rather.
What were the interrogations like? Because, it's a strange situation. You're technically German interviewing them. I mean, did they even realise?
No, I didn't know. I'm very good at speaking German with an English accent.
Would you do that deliberately?
Oh, yes. Why should I give my antecedents away? And they were all very happy to be taken prisoners of war, because most of them had really surrendered. They weren't... There weren't many prisoners. There were few and far between in the early days. Later on, it was changed completely, of course.
Would you be able to find anything much use out from them?
No. They were all simple soldiers who barely knew where they were and what they were doing and why they were doing it. But you found out what regiments they were and where they'd been. Because in theory, all they're allowed to give you is the army, their name and their army number. But they always give you a bit more than that. But nothing. I don't think we would. But you see, everything was moving so fast that whatever information you had was already out of date by the time you got there.
You mentioned in here, I missed it earlier, the mobile showers. Can you just tell us about the mobile showers? What were they like?
Well, there was a huge truck and it had those tent arrangements on the other side, and they had a supply of hot water, and you washed in there.
It was enough plentiful hot water to get a decent shower.
Yes.
And would they give you a new uniform at the showers? It wasn't that well set up.
No, we didn't. I don't remember getting any clean laundry. We did wash our own a bit. But there was
there
any time.
Problem with lice? Because I understand there wasn't.
No, never saw lice. Not that I remember. No. No, no vermin problems at all, really. But, you know, the worst part of Normandy were these stinking cows. It's difficult for anybody else to imagine, but the smell... And the dead soldiers too, of course, but the cows were even worse. All the legs stick up in the air, and they're all bloated. And odd. You're almost more concerned about them than the people.
I mean, how bad was the smell? I mean,
terrible.
From how far away
did you smell it? Oh, quite a ways off. And all these, you know, normally was full of cattle, and they were everywhere.
Now, were you part of the pace of the advance speeds up, you know, they start going towards Brussels and you know, and do you remember that part of it at all?
Yes, we went past, well, we didn't go towards Brussels, we stayed more on a more northerly track towards Holland. But first of all, we were supposed to go and relieve the Arnhem lot, and we were outside Arnhem you know the story.
No, we
never got there.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we were camped outside, 20-30 miles away from Arnhem. We saw the drop, and then we were supposed to go and relieve them, but it never came to that. In the meantime, the Bulge, I think, was finished by then, but we were not in the Battle of the Bulge.
The Battle of the Bulge is way later.
Later, is it?
December.
Is it? Oh, well.
It's a German offensive.
Yes.
Christmas.
Yes. Well, at Christmas we were already in Holland. I spent 44 Christmas on a farm in Holland, in Eindhoven, in.
So did you actually make any attempt to get forward during the Arnhem, or were you just waiting to go forward and never did?
We never did.
You never got.
And the guards were in front. The guards' brigade were in front of us, but they didn't get in either.
Well, they got stuck, didn't
yes.
they?
Yes. Now we got stuck behind them.
Now, the last point for today is this business of the treatment of collaborators by the French.
We had nothing, never in any time came across any collaborators that I know of. Maybe they talked to our colonels and their top brass.
You've got something about this girl with her hair shorn off.
Oh, that's in Holland.
That's in Holland,
yes.
Right. So in France, there was no mistreatment of collaborators.
I didn't see any anyway. But we weren't in any towns in France. I don't think we ever touched a major town.
Yes, so what happened when you advanced into Holland then?
Well, we went through Belgium and into a town called Mazeik, which is on the River Meuse, if you prefer, and from there we went across. Belgium was hardly affected by the war. You could get anything you liked. You had steak and chips, eggs and watches and stockings, the lot. But then we went across. The bridge was okay. We drove across the bridge into a small village, the other side, called Klevenbicht, where we spent Christmas on a farm. But we then had to dismount because it was so cold the tanks couldn't be used and on the ice. And we became infantry. It was rather a chilly job, but not for long.
Now, what do you remember? So you don't remember much about this period, do you? Because that's three or four months.
Yes, I remember more our time in Holland, of course, because of your...
And that's the next thing.
Yes.
We'll start with that
yeah.
next time.